Spiritual success is not just a matter of getting rid of the problems that obstruct our spiritual development, as we're about to learn in a sicha that is short but powerful. Al pasuk vayetze Yaakov be'er shava v'goymer, the pasuk, the beginning of the parasha that tells us that Yaakov left Be'er Shava, obviously on his way to Haran, ostensibly to run away from Esav, although what we're going to look at is a medrash that talks from a totally different angle, nothing to do with running from Esav. Isa medrash, the medrash tells us, mi be'er shava means mi be'era shel shavua. He ran away, Yaakov ran away from the be'er where they made these covenants, they made these peace treaties, which of course would sound like a really positive place, and Yaakov's running from it. Why? Amar Yaakov, shelo yamid olai avimelech v'yomei shava li k'shem shenishba li zikenecha. So Yaakov ran, he says, I don't want to be trapped over here where Avimelech, the king of the Plishtim, is going to make me commit to the kind of agreement that my father and grandfather did. And that would imply, if I would make this deal with Avimelech, then it would delay from now until the Jews could go into Israel. It would delay by 7 generations. So I would kind of protract the period of time until the Jews would go into Israel. What does that mean? Yois v'Avram nishba l'Avimelech v'alidei ha'shavua ikev es k'nisashem shol b'nei Yisrael es Yisrael zayin doyreis kimuvu b'medrash parashas v'yeirom. Because we know that the first person to make a deal with Avimelech, whether Avimelech is the same individual or if there are various Avimelechs, is irrelevant, but the representative of the people of Plishtim, so Avram Avinu makes a deal with him, and as a result of that, the Yidden are delayed 7 generations before they could enter Israel, as the Medrash tells us. Because if you calculate it from the time of Avram Avinu until the conquest of Sichon and Og, which were the big barrier to entering Eretz Israel, was a 7-generation delay. So 7-generation delay. Why? Because they made this peace treaty. Then it didn't end there. Yitzchak amhu nishbel Avimelech, v'aldeizeh ikvim oid d'racher. And then Yitzchak Avinu also made a deal with Avimelech, and that delayed the entrance into Eretz Yisrael by another generation. Kimi Yitzchak ad kibash aretz adei Yehoshua avr gam ken zayin deres. So if you work it out, from Yitzchak until Yehoshua's generation that actually entered Eretz Yisrael is another whole generation. So that's now 7 generations from Yitzchak until they entered. So that tells you there's a delay of an additional generation. So essentially it works out that from every peace treaty, there are 7 generations delay until the Jews can go into Israel. And Yaakov Avinu doesn't want that. So Yaakov Avinu doesn't want to be around. He doesn't want to be baited by Avimelech into making this kind of an agreement, which would now further delay the entrance into Eretz Yisrael to be 7 generations from where he is now. In other words, another generation longer till they could go into Eretz Yisrael. So most people don't ever hear this. We hear that Yaakov Avinu is running away from Esav, wants to kill him because he took the brochas. And now you see there's a whole different angle over here. He's running like crazy to avoid a peace treaty with Avimelech, which raises 2 interesting questions. Well, really one question, which basically is 2, depending on what angle you look at it from. So if tzarech lavin, we have to understand. No, when you consider that both Avram and Yitzchak were willing to make such an agreement with Avimelech, and they were not concerned about possible delays of their descendants going into Israel, and you do not find any kind of avoidance, any sidestepping, they don't run from Avimelech lest they have to make this kind of an agreement. They're fine, okay, we'll make the agreement, it's okay. So lomo dafke Yaakov, so why is Yaakov Dafka the one who's so afraid of getting into bed with this kind of an agreement with Avimelech? To the extent that the Medrash tells us he ran away, didn't want to be in this location. It's good enough for Avram and Yitzchak. Why is it not good enough for him? What's different about Yaakov compared to Avram and Yitzchak? So that's the one angle of the question. If it was okay for them, why is it not okay for him? Now let's flip the question. Question applies equally in the opposite direction. How How could Avraham and Yitzchak not have been concerned about delaying the entrance to Israel? Surely it's their descendants as much as Yaakov Avinu's descendants. Surely they knew what was going to happen, as Yaakov Avinu knew what was going to happen. How were they okay with it? They were willing to accept that there is some delay getting into Eretz Yisrael. So there's obviously a fundamental difference between Yaakov Avinu and Avraham and Yitzchak. Once we understand that primary difference, then we can understand their different approaches to whether or not you look to make this kind of a peace agreement. So in order to understand this, we know throughout Hasidus we talk extensively about the fundamental difference between Yaakov Avinu as one of our avos compared to Avram and Yitzchak as our avos. And once we understand the fundamental difference between the two groups, Avram and Yitzchak on the one hand, Yaakov on the other hand, so then we'll also understand that they had totally different forms of Avodas Hashem. Based on that different kind of Avodas Hashem, either a peace treaty with Avimelech is a concept that should be addressed and is acceptable, or it is a suggestion that is completely rejected, as in Yaakov's case. So only once we understand Avraham and Yitzchak versus Yaakov can we answer this question. Now, all of that difference is going to boil down to the difference in terms of how their children turned out. Avraham yotza mimenu Yishmael. We know that Avraham Avinu had a son Yishmael yotza mimenu. He separated himself from Avraham. He went down a different path. He kind of excised any connection that he might have had with Avraham Avinu. Likewise, Yitzchak yotza mimenu Esav. Yitzchak had a son called Esav who went on a completely different path from what Yitzchak himself followed, what he would have wanted for his children. So they each had a child who went, so to speak, off the rails. So in spite of the fact that both Yishmael and Esav were the children of incredibly great people, they detached themselves. They uncoupled themselves from that relationship. Which means, ki hakdusha shel Avraham Yitzchak v'avidosim lo higiu livneim eiluv leipolu b'hem sheyehofchu letoiv. What it means is that all of the effort and all of the growth and all of the spiritual development of Avraham and Yitzchak, which touched the whole world, did not integrate into their children Yishmael and Esav to the extent that they became part of the journey. So Avraham and Yitzchak went to these incredible spiritual altitudes, but it didn't rub off in a personal, meaningful way on either Yishmael or Esav, so they went on their merry way and they detached from this perspective on life, this way of living, and so on. Compare that to Yaakov. Aval Yaakov ma'ila sheloi mitos yishleim. Ki avidosei podo b'choli b'beiz bonam shu shleimim u'shleim v'shaychusim v'yaakov madrigosei. Yaakov, on the other hand, all of his children remained absolutely committed to his values. Yes, there might have been issues between the children on different topics, you know, unrelated to their commitment to Kedusha and to the values of Torah and commitment to Hashem. When it came to those values, they were all 100% on the same page. All totally committed, all totally holy. So in other words, Yaakov Avinu's Avoida definitely rubbed off on his children in a very personal and sustainable way. Now you're going to say, so what's the big difference over here? Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, all three of them are considered a merkava, a complete vehicle, which means they're absolutely dedicated, submissive to Hashem. They don't have an ego. They don't have an ulterior set of motives. Whatever Hashem wants, that's what they do. And all of the neshamas come from the realm of Atzilus, which is complete transparency. The Hashem just simply shines through them. So how can there be such a marked difference between Avraham and Yitzchak, how they impacted their children, and how Yaakov impacted his? Still, Yashchiluk b'neim, it's because there's a distinction between them. And we will see that a big part of what the distinction between them is relates to how they tackled the part of the world that is not holy. If you have a look at Yaakov Avinu's life, you'll see that the theme of his life is you tackle the negative and you turn it. You flip the negative to become yours. So you go into the world of Lavan, and he's a trickster, and he's a completely dishonest individual, and you learn his tricks of his trade, and you use those tricks themselves to extract holiness out of Lavan and out of Choron. So that's why Yaakov becomes this incredibly wealthy man. Whatever Lavan says, tell me these kinds of sheep, those are the sheep we're going to elevate to Kedusha. And that's what you'll find with Esav. Even with Esav, to a certain extent, it's Yaakov Avinu who brings out the positive in Esav in the short term in Parshas Vayishlach, and in the long term through the period of Golus and eventually Mashiach. So Yaakov's theme is, you tackle the negative and you transform it. Mashenken and Avraham Yitzchak, which you're not going to see by Avraham and Yitzchak, as we'll explain. So even these beautiful moments in their respective histories, at the end of Parshas Chayesara, we're told that Yishmol does teshuva. Oh, beautiful, Yishmol does teshuva. And in Parshas Vayishlach, we see that Esav embraces and kisses Yaakov, and there's an opinion that Rashi quotes that he actually meant it. Not the other opinion that he was trying to bite his neck. He actually meant it. We know that those two periods, as beautiful as they were, did not last. So the descendants of Yishmael did not continue that teshuvah. And the descendants of Esav, and even Esav himself, actually, after that encounter with Yaakov Avinu, didn't sustain that love and commitment and connection. So Avraham and Yitzchak, we don't see that they transform the negative to positive. Even though we do know that both Avraham and Yitzchak were very much engaged in the primary goal of Avodah, which is Avodah Sabirurim, to refine the world, to elevate the world, to extract sparks of holiness out of the world. The Chazal teach us about the fact that it says Avraham called in the name of Hashem. As we know very well, that Avraham Avinu set up this free hotel service in the middle of the desert, which he used as an opportunity to get people to proclaim Hashem. So you see, Avodah Sabirurim, you take people who are in the realm of impurity and you coach them and bring them into the realm of purity. So that is Avodah Sabirurim. That's extracting goodness and positivity and holiness out of an unholy environment. However, we'll see in a moment, it's not the same as Yaakov. Similarly, even though it was a very different path, but it's the same principle. When Yitzchak went digging well after well, in addition to the fact that it's just a story of creating a healthy water source for his family, it's really a story of elevating the world. How do you dig down and find the treasures that are beneath the surface of the world, which is indicative of digging to find the spiritual treasures that are within the world? So they both were engaged in Avodah Sabirurim, the elevation of holiness that is embedded in our world. Nevertheless, in both of their cases, all they wanted really to do was to remove the interference against holiness. So what's Avraham Avinu's message to the world? There's a God. You don't agree with that? Let's change your mind so that you are no longer opposed to the concept that there's one God. And in fact, you'll even accept it in your world. Likewise with Yitzchak. What does Yitzchak want to do? He wants to dig around well after well until he eventually gets all these big brochas, Be'er Sheva, or, you know, all the things that indicate that we have found goodness in the place of conflict. So the Plishtim were perhaps fighting against us and trying to stop up those wells and not allow the holiness to come to the surface. And we remove their objections and we create the flow that we need to create. However, what you're going to find is that in none of those cases was there really longevity. So Avraham Avinu has all of these people. He brings Tachas Kanfei Hashchina. He creates awareness of Hashem and they give up their polytheistic views and they can acknowledge Hashem. But we don't find that there's this huge group of people who now become the Bnei Yisrael after that, right? In the next generation, who is it? It's back down to Yitzchak educating Yaakov. And in the next generation, it's Yaakov and his sons. And all of these other people, their children and grandchildren, disappear off the face of the earth. They're not part of the long-term experience of connection to Hashem. In the now, Avraham and Yitzchak are successful because their primary goal is get things out of the way that might interfere with Kedusha. Their goal is not to transform those things themselves into Kedusha, as we'll read. Which means that the primary focus of Avraham and Yitzchak's work was in negating. Let's negate the toxic. Let's rid ourselves of the things that are obstructive. And Yaakov Avinu, on the other hand, he goes to a place called Choron, which is so named because of how antithetical to holiness it is. It's a place, so to speak, that angers Hashem more than any other place on earth. And what does he do there? He goes there to create his whole base out of Choron. His family, his wealth, everything comes out of Choron. That's his objective. Let's turn Choron around. And we can compare this to something which is relatable for us. To be similar to the distinction between how a tzaddik serves Hashem and how a baal teshuva serves Hashem. The reality of a tzaddik is the tzaddik doesn't even understand. It doesn't relate to the concept of negativity. It doesn't even have an inappropriate thought. Right? A tzaddik does not think something that is not aligned with what Hashem would want. So, kimvur b'tanya baruchah. As is explained in Tanya in tremendous detail, that's what a tzaddik is. The tzaddik doesn't have the challenge of, ooh, I shouldn't think this. The thoughts don't enter. The tzaddik lives in a pristine environment. Whereas the baal tshuva has been on the wrong side of the tracks, engaged with things that are impure, and now his job is to transform those things that they themselves should become merits. They should become part of his spiritual journey. So Avraham and Yitzchak are like the tzaddikim. Let's just keep all the negative out of the way. Yaakov is like the baal teshuva. Let's turn the negative into positive. Negative is part of my life. It's part of my reality. So if it's part of my reality, I need to transform it. For Avraham and Yitzchak, it's not part of my reality. So let's kind of just push it away. Now that you're going to see in a second that there's an incredible little flip that happens in that distinction. What's the flip? Avram and Yitzchak, their approach is just, okay, let's keep the negative away, ensure that it doesn't interfere with us. That means to say that it's still negative, right? It's negative just outside of my fence, outside of my reality. But it's still negative, which means at any point in time, the negative can grow again, right? Because it's still negative. So, what is quite possible, not only possible, it's what happened in practice, is that the seeds of negativity remain in those people or in those places. And even though Avraham and Yitzchak keep them at bay, at any point in time, Avraham and Yitzchak move on, are no longer in this world, and then the negative can rise again. So like Yishmael, you kick him out of the house. Send Yishmael out of the house. He doesn't belong over here. He's a bad influence over Yitzchak. Get rid of him. And then at some point in time, Yishmael has this awakening and he says, okay, I want to connect. But he hasn't fundamentally changed because nobody's worked with him to change him. We've just worked with him to apply pressure to him so that at some point he realizes, okay, you know, this pressure is too much to bear. Maybe I should kind of align with my father's house again. But he hasn't changed fundamentally. And the same goes for Esav. Esav sees he's overwhelmed. Wow, he didn't believe it that Yaakov would have all this success and that the brochas, as Yaakov says, that he was given are not necessarily the brochas that he has. So Esav kind of softens for a period of time. But Yaakov sees right through it and he says, listen, I'm not going to engage with you now. We'll catch up at some point in the future. You know, Asher Avoye al Adonai Seira. One day when Mashiach comes, then we'll talk. But right now, you're a dangerous guy. You just happen to be in a docile mood at the moment, but you're actually a dangerous guy. And that's why the expression we use about both Yishmael and Esav is Yotzu. They left. They did not have a meaningful connection to their parents, their respective parents, and certainly not to their way of serving Hashem. So they still had very much their own identity, which is an identity of impurity. The only good thing is that Avraham and Yitzchak were successful in ensuring that Yishmael and Esav did not interfere with what they were trying to do. So Yishmael, you're getting in the way? Goodbye. Esav, you're getting in the way? Well, Esav is even different to that. Esav comes showing Yitzchak, look how frum I am, and I give miser on salt and all these interesting things. We certainly didn't interfere with him. Yitzchak needs something. Esav has incredible commitment to his father, great kibud av. He goes and he runs and he does it. So that was the success of Avraham and Yitzchak. They ensured that whatever negative forces were around them did not block them. But they didn't change. I'll call upon him. כשאין לא שייך זה קדוש ואין מנהיג ידס לא, לא ינוג בעבידוסם של אברהם יצחוק, ואם קיים אין מציוס של עצמו משללס מצד עבידוסם זוי. So all that happens with Avram and Yitzchak is where there's a point of contact between the world of Kedusha represented by Avram and the world of Klippa represented by Yishmael. Where they touch, there's no opposition from Yishmael to Avram or from Esav to Yitzchak. Where they don't touch, what Yishmael does in his own backyard, who Esav marries, no influence, no impact. They actually live a rotten life, in spite of the fact that that rotten life does nothing to interfere with Yitzchak and Avram's holy lives. We're going to see another example of exactly this point that is in last week's parasha. We can find with Avram, Avram Avinu settled physically within the boundaries of the Ches family, the children of Ches. And they had tremendous respect for him. They recognized he was a man of God, and he was somebody who had lived within them and kind of elevated them and added value to them, and it did nothing for them. That's exactly like the person says, I think you're wonderful. I think you're an amazing person, as rabbis often hear. I think your values are amazing. I think the things that you do are amazing. But it doesn't necessarily change the person who gives all that flattery. So here's the B'nai Ches saying, Avram Avinu, Nasi Elokim, wow, you're such a holy man. Okay, what does it mean in my life? Nothing, actually. Avram Avinu lives amongst them for a period of time. They got the holiest man on earth living in their neighborhood, and they are unmoved. They remain B'nai Ches from start to finish without any spiritual upgrade. So when Avram Avinu needs something, because that's what we say whenever there's engagement between Avoida and Klippa, so his Avoida is so strong, the Klippa says, okay, fine, we won't get in your way. You need a place to bury Sarah. That's currently your Avoida Hashem. No problem. Nobody's going to withhold any land from you. That's it. We're good. We're not going to make your life difficult. But we're still going to be B'nai Ches. And we're going to do B'nai Ches things. And we're not becoming B'nai Yisrael. And we're not following you on your journey.
Yaakov's
got a completely different approach. Yaakov says, if there's bad, we have to transform that bad until there is no further bad. Not just put up big walls to keep the bad out. Not just ensure that our systems work and the rest of the world will do what they do and we'll touch them to a certain extent, but we won't transform them. Yaakov says we have to transform so that there's no bad left. Not that it's just not affecting me, there should be no bad left. As a direct result of which, every one of Yaakov's family has no bad, has no alternate path that they might want to follow. They're completely dedicated to their father's values. With that in mind, we can understand the different approaches that Avram and Yitzchak take to what Yaakov takes about potentially making a peace treaty with Avimelech. Because we've got to understand what the significance of this peace treaty is. Now we understand why Avram and Yitzchak were happy to make a peace treaty based on a shvur, a covenant with Avimelech. Why? Because what's the purpose of a shvur? Why do you make such a shvur? Why do you make a covenant with somebody who you don't like? You make this kind of a covenant to make sure that your enemy doesn't bother you. It's called a ceasefire. It's called a peace agreement. Peace agreement means we're not at peace. We're just agreeing to conduct ourselves in a peaceful fashion so you don't bother me and I don't bother you. I still hate you, but I won't bother you. And that's pretty much what Avram and Yitzchak intended to achieve by making these peace treaties with Avimelech. The goal of the peace treaty was, don't bother us. We have an avoider to do, and that's it. Don't get in the way of our avoider. Nothing in the fine print of that agreement ever said, and Avimelech, you also have to become a man of God. You also have to become dedicated to our value system. It's not in there because it wasn't relevant to them. As long as Avimelech is not an impediment to our avoida, then Avimelech is doing in our eyes as best as he needs to do. That's the approach of Avram and Yitzchak. It is thematic throughout their whole lives. Their goal is to remove barriers to holiness, not to transform the whole world. It's not yet that stage of avoida. They're building towards it, but it's not their avoida. But Yaakov, who builds obviously on the investment of Avraham and Yitzchak, and therefore is now capable of the next level of avoida. So his avoida is, it's not good enough just to shut the door and make sure that no negative influences come into our space. He recognizes that the avoida is transform them. How do we make the negative positive? Iskafya, and even more than that, ishapcha. To transform darkness into light, not just to shine a light so that the darkness is dispelled, but to teach the darkness to shine. So Yaakov's not going to make a deal with Avimelech. That's like an endorsement of the fact that Avimelech is klipa. He is impure. That's against Yaakov's belief system. Yaakov's belief system is, if you're impure, we have to change you. Not make peace with you. If you make peace with something, that means you accept it. If you accept it, you'd never transform it. And Yaakov's goal is to transform. Now we can understand the Medrash that says that when Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, it means he ran away from the place where there might be the potential to make a Shvua deal with Avimelech. Because Yaakov's avoida is, we cannot come to terms with the fact that there is negative in this world. We're not going to make a handshake and say, you be negative in your space and I'll be positive in my space. Yaakov says, we cannot come to terms with the notion of negative in the world. So if you're still negative, I cannot talk to you. Until we transformed you, I cannot engage you. So what's Yaakov's response? Yaakov's response is, there's still an Avimelech in the world. That's not just an Avimelech living here in Gerar, the land of the Philistines. That means there's a whole world out there that still has to be transformed. So I'm not going to stay here in the pristine environment of Israel and deal with these nuances. I'm going to go out in Charon Afshal Emokim Bo'elam, the place that is the most antithetical, the place that is worse than an Avimelech, and I'm certainly not going to make peace over there. I'm not going to accept that part of the world. On the contrary, I'm going to transform that part of the world, because the impact that that will have is massive. And a little peace treaty with Avimelech is just going to make life comfortable for me, but it's not going to have the impact that I'd like to have, or that my avoider is supposed to have. And now you understand why Avram and Yitzchak were not concerned that perhaps making this deal with Avimelech will delay the entry into Israel of future generations. Why was that not even on their agenda? It's not because they made a decision, and their decision was a poor decision which impacted their children, that they couldn't go into Israel. That's not what's happening here. They're saying there's still an Avimelech to deal with. And this Avimelech is the impediment to getting into Eretz Yisrael. It's not us. It's not our choice or decision that we've interfered with the Yidden going into Israel. This is a fact. There is Ra in the world. There's an Avimelech in the world. And a direct consequence of an Avimelech in the world is it's going to take time till eventually you can get past that challenge and you can get into Eretz Yisrael. The fact that the negativity exists in the world, that's what makes it difficult for the Jews to get into Eretz Yisrael. Not the fact that we made a peace treaty and that somehow has some kind of spiritual chain impact that they can't go into Eretz Yisrael. We're acknowledging a fact. There are still Avimelechs in the world. There are still obstacles to the entrance to Israel. So we are going to deal with those obstacles in the now in the only way we can, which is to create a sense of boundary. And there will be a time in the future where it will no longer be a barrier, and then you'll go into Eretz Yisrael. Only after Yaakov Avinu does his radical avoida, which is not just simply to lock out the bad, but to tackle the bad and to transform the bad, much more importantly than to tackle it, to transform it, That is actually what empowers the Yidden to be able to go into Eretz Yisrael. Actually, if you think about it, that's what the whole point of Eretz Yisrael is. It's Kanaan, which is a place of promiscuity. The Torah calls it in Parshas Achrei Mois the most amoral place on earth. And what do? With it? We transform it into Eretz Yisrael. We transform it into the Holy Land. So how do we get the power to do that? Yaakov is the one who kind of embedded in us the ability to transform the world. Now we can understand exactly how things will be in the time of Mashiach also, because the time of Mashiach is going to be the result of a Yaakov approach more than an Avraham Yitzchak approach. Through our avoida now, in the here and now, not to create barriers against the bad that is out there, but to transform the bad, to use technology as a means of spreading Torah, to be in every part of the world and yet create holiness in those parts of the world, not only in Israel, to engage with others who are outside of the Jewish faith and bring them on board to support us and to help us to practice Judaism in what we see in today's world in an unprecedented fashion, to use the thinking and the teachings of what's outside of the world of Judaism as a means to understand Torah better. So to transform the world into a place of holiness, like Yaakov did in Charan, that's what will bring us the final Beis Hamikdash, the lasting Beis Hamikdash. We won't have a Beis Hamikdash like the first Beis Hamikdash compared to how Avraham Avinu referred to it as a mountain. A mountain is an uninhabited place. And not like the second Beis Hamikdash compared to the way Yitzchak referred to the area as a field. A field is not an inhabited place. But rather the third Beis Hamikdash, which will last forever, which is the one Yaakov referred to when he said, Beis Elohim, this is a house, it's a permanent structure. How do you create a permanent structure of holiness in our world? By confronting, tackling, and transforming the world around us. The Vias Mashiach Zikena, that should happen with the coming of Mashiach, and it should happen immediately now.